Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 168. And for those of you who have been loyal followers of the podcast, you guys know that in September, I was at THU and I recorded a whole bunch of podcasts that I did for THU TV. I think I recorded 16 of them. And they're each small interviews for THU TV, but with really interesting people. And I sort of paired two up and made an entire podcast out of it. Andre was kind enough to let me have those recordings to do those podcasts. So anyway, this is the last of them. This is a really interesting one. As I said, I try to spread them out throughout the year. But this one is with Josh Naylor, who is an evangelist for Unity and has been a Unity user for a long time and has a lot of interest in terms of what Unity can do for lots of different non-games. In fact, he even talks about how he visited NASA to help them out with some things that they were exploring in real-time engines. Brian Sharp, the second part of the podcast is with Brian Sharp and Angus McKay. Brian works for Oculus Medium, and Angus McKay works for Unity, and he's a big shot over at Unity. And the two of them talk, one, about how VR tools are going to work, how they work in a real-time engine, and how real-time engines are basically, again, going to be working for non-games. This is a very interesting part for us. We just got back from GTC, and not only that, but we announced, one of the big announcements we had this last week was V-Ray for Unreal. Yes, it is a real thing. You can register for it. You can go to chaosgroup.com and register for V-Ray for Unreal. Try it out. Give us our feedback. Let us know what you think. It's a big deal. We believe that it's an extremely exciting time right now for rendering engines. Lots of news about this came out, especially from GDC and GTC, and where ray tracing fits in, real-time ray tracing fits in. Trust me, we are very well aware of all of these exciting things, and it is a very exciting time to be a rendering engine right now, especially if you're one that has done a lot of research in this area. So really exciting to do that. Going back to THU, like I said, this is the last one I did there, but THU, which is Trojan Horse Was a Unicorn, which is this great conference that I attend, which is where I recorded this particular podcast, it's moving this year. It is going to Malta. It's no longer going to be in Portugal. So it's going to be in a small nation and island in the smack middle of the Pacific called Malta. And I'm very excited about that. And I can't wait to go. Generally, tickets sell out fast, but Andre has a lot more tickets this year. So there may still be some available if you guys are interested in going to THU, which I highly recommend. I mean, I really recommend it. Then go block out some time at the end of September and buy your tickets at trojan-unicorn.com and go to Malta, and I would love to see you there. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. Besides that, there's lots of other news that we have. Obviously, just go to chaosgroup.com and check out all the other news. But really, really exciting to do this. And let's go on to the podcast with Josh Naylor, Brian Sharp, and Angus McKay. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
We're here with Josh from Unity, and let's go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you do at Unity.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having us, Chris. So I'm a technical evangelist at Unity.
Uh-huh.
And it's exactly as a preachy as it sounds.
Yes.
So so I travel the world and teach people how to use Unity and show people how amazing it can be for games and non-games. So right now I'm here at THU TV, just been in South Africa meeting developers.
Right.
Next week, Stockholm, and many other places after that to spread the word and show people why it's so great.
But as an evangelist, usually people that get those jobs as evangelists, and I know several of them in different industries, get them because they really know the tool and they got that thing. So how did you come to know Unity and how did you start using it yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I actually started using it in university.
Right.
Just making games on the side of my studies. So I was studying computer science at the time. Mm-hmm. In the UK. And we was learning C++, engine development, like OpenGL stuff. But for me, I wanted to make games. And
right.
At that time, I was making like rendering, or I was making side engines and stuff like that. So that wasn't happy to me. So I was like, I want to make games. Unity is the best like engine for that, or it's the best tool right now to get those games on different app stores and create a portfolio for myself so I could start making games after university. And then what I did was started with Microsoft as an ambassador, like a student ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing lots of things around the UK and teaching other students how to make games at that point in time. And then met so many people at Unity, and I was like, this is the only place I want to work. And then I've been doing so for over 3.5 years now.
So 3.5 years you've been doing that. When did you first start using Unity?
It will have been about 5 years ago now, since okay. Unity 3.5.
Okay.
So we've been through quite a lot of iterations since right. then.
Yeah, what version of Unity is there now?
2017.2, which is currently, okay. it's currently in beta, so we've gone right. through 4, 5, and this is kind of like the 6th version, but we've now changed our whole subscription model to be right. iterative releases.
So Unity is sort of known as a way to create game content, right? So it's almost like an authoring tool in some way, right? And I think that one of the biggest reasons that Unity became so popular is because it is so almost platform agnostic into what it delivers. So you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, at the very first release of Unity, it was a Mac only engine. And at the right. time, everyone was like, "Wow, what are these crazy guys doing? The three founders."
Right.
And then we slowly introduced other platforms, Windows, and like in the version 2. And then ever since then, from the iPhone release, we supported iPhone, and then the Wii, which was the official dev environment for the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we now support like 26 different platforms on PC, mobile, console, VR and AR. And then,
but you guys really sort of created the first, were known for the first sort of mobile game authoring tool, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like I say, it's we created an amazing environment for people to be able to make games. The editor itself is a really amazing workflow.
Right.
But then also you're writing code, all C# or Unity scripts, like a JavaScript variant, and then you can just deploy to all of those platforms with hardly ever changing anything.
Right. And that's quite a feat, actually, to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a crazy engineering feat.
It
yeah,
is we've got a really big engineering feat because to the user or the person using Unity is like, I'm going to make it for everything. Right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I think that was really what was really interesting, and talk about what when Unity sort of became big for the mobile world, right? You saw suddenly a big jump in quality in mobile game content that was coming out. So the quality of games that you're allowed to do with much less knowledge that they needed in the past is suddenly possible. So let's talk a little bit about how Unity, from the early stages, we can talk about what it is later, but from the early stages, how that sort of helped the creative process and what did that do and sort of change the landscape in that way?
Yeah, sure. I think as well, like when we look at kind of like the start of what apps were and what mobile game development was, like a lot of the bigger names or bigger game studios wasn't jumping onto mobile. It was right. more of just people creating their own smaller games as like hobbyists. And then as soon as mobile got bigger and bigger and the user base of mobile and mobile gaming got huge, then a lot of that was traditionally console or PC game studios went down to mobile for the mass market.
Right.
And then again, with the editor and how easy it was to use, a lot more artists to be able to get their work and crunch it into Unity.
So tell me a little bit about the editor. What is that experience like? If let's say someone says, I'm thinking about making a game or whatever and trying to get into Unity, what kind of a transition? Let's say it is a traditional 3D artist, someone's
yeah, sure.
a Max artist or Maya artist or something, and they want to try to get into Unity and do something. What would they need to learn or to get into it and be able to do and publish their own games? Is
that okay, sure. Yeah. So I mean, first of all, we open up a blank slate. We open up like the default editor, completely fresh.
Yeah.
And then we can pull in various different files, so like an FBX or an OBG file,
mm-hmm.
which is like pretty standard for Max or Maya,
right.
whatever. And then you can pull it into your scene, and you can witness straight away what that model looks like in your scene. So you can press play. You can add an animation on, and there we go, it's animated in your world.
Right.
Straight away, you can add components onto it through the hierarchy and the inspector. Mm-hmm. So you can add physics, you can add rendering, you can adjust all your lighting and make it look really pretty with different cameras, different post-processing effects on.
Right.
And then what you, so from there you would need to code, so you would need to add in like interactivity, your input, things like that. But for an artist just to get started to demo their work in Unity is really, really simple.
Which, okay, well that's very interesting. So if you want to, unless you want to go a step further and you say, you know what, I'm going to do it all by myself, right? What coding would you need to know to get into it?
So the default scripting language is C#.
C#, okay.
Yep. And then we've got so many tutorials on our website on unity3d.com.
Right.
And we've got tutorials to suit everyone's needs, from very, very simple 2D tutorials all the way down to optimizing Unity for like hardcore programmers.
Right.
But also the community, like the best thing about the Unity engine, the Unity environment, is the huge, huge community that puts stuff on YouTube. They write their own tutorials. They comment on the forums and Unity Answers and Stack Overflow as well.
Right.
So like, if there's anything you ever need, like I still do this myself, Unity, how to do this in a search engine, and you can find an answer straight away.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really great. Well, what's interesting now is obviously because it's become so popular and a lot of people have started using it, and it's become sort of an interesting way of creating all kinds of content that's available on many, many platforms. People are starting to look at it as a means of creating stuff beyond games, right? So if you're looking beyond games, what's probably interesting to a company like Unity is you're probably getting a lot of people that you did not necessarily expect as customers, right?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that. What are you seeing, and what use cases do you see within those different industries?
So like, I mean, first of all, like we traditionally have been a game engine, like that's our business, where now we think that we're more of an interactive rendering solution,
right?
Like real-time rendering for film, animation, AR, VR, everything possible that people can create. So yeah, I've visited many studios. I've visited NASA recently, JPL, are making HoloLens applications where they're taking the height map data from Mars and all of the photos that the Mars rover is taking and putting that into the HoloLens for people to view all around the world.
Wow.
It's absolutely insane. And then we're going into movie studios and seeing how people are creating VR animations and interactive animations. So it's not just a linear story. The person taking part in the experience is actually driving the story by what they're doing in the scene.
Right. So like virtual production.
Yeah,
exactly. Right? Yeah, I think that's really a fascinating thing on virtual production. There's a lot of people that are sort of looking at solutions of interactive solutions to do virtual production that I think is going to be critical to how we make movies. It's going to be a game changer in a lot of things. Obviously, I also used to come from the architecture background.
Yeah.
I used to be an architect, and I know that architects are actually looking at Unity as well. So what are some of the things that you're seeing people in the architecture world do?
Yeah, we've seen it for many years, actually. Especially architecture has been kind of one of the driving forces for things that are non-games. People being able to bring in their CAD models and render it in real time so they can go and take it to a client and saying, oh yeah, you don't like this sofa here, maybe we can turn it around, and everything, all of the lighting updates in real time.
Right.
And then obviously with all the post-processing stack, all of the flying camera systems with the animation, putting it into VR, instantly you just tick one button to say virtual reality supported, you press play in the editor, and you can witness it in VR as well.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating because yes, you're right, it's, if you think about it, it's shouldn't necessarily be that complicated for rendering it to go to VR. All you're doing is just creating a different camera, a different viewing system. But what I think is also interesting is the fact that compared to a game, as an example, you don't really need to add a huge amount of interactivity to this process.
Exactly, yeah. You could just have your generic first-person controller, which comes with our standard assets.
Right.
As long as you know how to import the model.
So
and
you
set
could,
up some lighting.
And then you can just walk around.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore, you are now created an interactive experience.
That's right.
And that's it. And so your need for programming is even less.
Exactly,
right?
Or
almost nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the asset store, you could download some visual scripting editors.
Okay.
So you can literally do it all with drag and drop. What you see is what you get editor.
Okay. Well, that's fascinating. I really think it's really cool. I am actually sort of interested in some of the other creative tools that you guys have. So if someone wants to create things and think of the fact that you can think of Unity as a creative tool as opposed to just a an authoring tool. So what are some of the other tools that are available for people who want to create things inside of Unity?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I absolutely love VR content creation. So
okay.
Things like Tiltbrush and Medium by Oculus and Blocks by Google as well.
Right.
Like those tools for artists that they can put on a headset and they can use 3D modeling packages and with their hands, not just sat there at a desk using a mouse and keyboard.
Right.
They can move around a full 3D environment and then export that into Unity.
Right.
And then they can manipulate it again with Editor VR. So the whole process can be in VR. You're creating the content, bring it into Unity, and then you can manipulate it further in virtual reality in the actual editor.
Yeah, I spoke to the Unity guys earlier. The Tiltbrush guys earlier, and they were talking about that process. I really think it's fascinating that you take it, and instead of taking it back to another 3D application, you take it right into Unity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so it becomes directly part of your interactive experience in some ways.
Yeah, it's amazing. And creatives and artists can have really great control over the whole workflow. Instead of just passing it off to programmers and saying, implement this into the engine, they can have so much more control and a say in what's going to be going forward for the artistic vision.
Yeah. What are some of the other things that you're seeing that are going to become trends, do you think, in this market that would be interesting for you to explore?
A lot of it is like business use cases as well. Mm-hmm. So people using game engine technology for creating training simulations. So I recently saw one where it's like an oil rig simulator. So instead of sending their new employees out on a helicopter to the North Sea to be on an oil rig, they're using that just in a classroom, computer and mouse, to guide them around the safety procedures.
So it's virtualizing a lot of these things,
exactly,
virtual training. That's another thing I find interesting. If you think about the idea of making it safer to do things, I know that they were even looking at it, the ISS simulator.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm friends with some of the guys at Magnopa, so I know what's going on. But just the idea of like simulating an environment, it's like, a little expensive to take someone to space to train them.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even just creating it in the pool can be expensive. But if you just put a VR headset on and try to do the training that way, it's kind of cool.
And what's really amazing now is people are kind of coming around to the idea of using game engine technology.
Mm-hmm.
Because often you'd be like, oh, Unity can do this. And like, oh, but that's a game engine. We're not really sure about game engines.
That's a stigma that you guys are overcoming?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's what one of my jobs is, to go to these more business-focused VR conferences and marketing conferences,
mm-hmm,
and show people like the true power of what a game engine can do and real-time technology can do.
Right.
And that's why we're talking to so many film and animation creators, because instead of rendering each frame for 30 hours, they can render it near enough instantly in Unity.
Right, they can. But I'll tell you this, as someone who works for V-Ray, there are certain limitations,
obviously. Of course, right? But we're progressing that all of the time.
Of course. So my philosophy about that is that basically I'm saying, will real-time rendering replace offline rendering? And I say, yes, of course it will. It will replace it. Eventually people are not going to wait for renders. But will rasterized rendering replace ray tracing? I say no, because I think ray tracing is the end goal in a lot of cases. Now, rasterized rendering is a very good solution. I used to use a rasterized renderer for years, but sometimes it does take a little bit longer, but there's ray tracing that's sort of needed. I still feel that there's a place. I'm very fascinated by what's going on in things like Unity, because I think there's a place for rendering there that goes beyond ray tracing. And so that's the other thing that I find, is for technology companies to come together and think about that, because I think that there's some really good collaborations that can happen with all kinds of companies that do all kinds of things. And you guys are offering you're offering a glue in a lot of ways where we can sort of put all of these different tools together that go beyond even that.
Yeah, sure. And I'm really up for cross collaboration between so many companies in different areas. Like all of our VR stuff, for example, we're working with all of the major platforms to make sure that the VR standard is set across the world, really, because then we can all benefit from that if we're all working together.
Right.
And like you say, with ray tracing rendering, working together, lots of different companies, they can make the whole industry 10 times better.
Absolutely.
And then work their own strands off that, depending.
And there's probably, I mean, you guys already probably have several Unity plugins, I'm sure, that people can work with inside of things. So that's the way it needs to work. It's take Unity and make all this stuff come together, and then put it out there.
Yeah, exactly. Like with our SDKs previously, everything was quite segregated between our Oculus SDK, our Vive SDK, Gear VR SDK, and we're now bringing that all just under the hood, very cross-platform.
Right.
As soon as you tick that button, that can work for any one of those platforms.
Oh, that's,
we're working
that's nice.
With those companies. Yeah.
So therefore, you can publish to multiple platforms pretty quickly. So,
yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So you're almost dealing with the VR platforms in the same way that you're dealing with the previous mobile platforms and stuff like
that,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And then the AR stuff as well now, we're working very close with Euphoria. We've got compatibility for the AR kit and the Google AR stuff as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, that sounds great. I'm curious about what's going to happen with AR. Well, tell me a little bit about your feeling about AR and how Unity's... Obviously, you mentioned the NASA project, right? But tell me your feelings about AR and how do you think that market's going to go?
Yeah, I think... For me personally, AR is just going to transform our lives entirely. Maybe not anywhere near in the next few years, but in 10, 15 years.
Okay.
Like, we're all going to be having wearables.
Sure.
Either glasses or...
So you really think that's going to be happening?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think things like maybe like the Google Glass was maybe before its time. I think if that's released,
maybe a few more
years, then...
But it did bring up a lot of interesting issues, right? And then even
privacy,
ethical issues, right?
Security, yeah. It's one of those things. But yeah, for me, I think VR is going to be more entertainment based and AR is going to be part of our daily lives. Like everything that we do, work, play, like it's going to be there.
Okay, cool. I guess I'll see how much time we have left. I'm not sure how much time we have left. Yep. Oh, okay, we're good. We got plenty of time. So tell me a little bit about your THU. What you've been seeing here and what you're looking forward to.
Sure, yeah. I mean, for me, I'd never really heard of the conference before until about a month ago when I found out that we're going to take part. So I looked about it. I asked some people in the industry, and I was kind of sold on it near enough straight away.
Right.
So I'm super happy to be here. We've met so many different people from different industries as well.
Right.
It's really been amazing because, I mean, I mainly look after games and VR, AR in games. So seeing movie makers, animation creators, just generic, like really, really talented artists as well that are not really into like games or the engineering side of things. It's been quite inspiring to be here. So I think I need to pick up my notepad and pencil to start sketching again. I've not done that for some time.
Yeah, and it's interesting because those guys are, you know, obviously you said there are a lot of very artist people and you guys are sort of trying to make an effort to make it more artist friendly in a way. And what do you think you want to take away from here in terms of how you're going to get people to use this and understand it in a lot of ways? What do you think people want to do with this tool?
Yeah, sure. I mean, people have been just coming up to me and be like, oh yeah, I'd love to use Unity, but I'm just not sure on the technical limitations of what I can do. So for them, it's more about the confidence of themselves being able to overcome it.
Right.
So as soon as I open up my laptop, I'm like, oh, actually, you can bring in your model with this. You can add a Cinemachine camera on, like a procedural camera to rotate around.
Right.
All codeless. Use the timeline sequencer to sequence lots of animations one after another and blend them.
Right.
Again, it's all codeless. And as soon as I show them this, they're like, oh, wow. Oh, I can definitely get my head around it.
So that's nice. You've been able to show people exactly what to do.
Yeah,
Have you been able to take their assets and say, look how easy it is to do something like that?
We've just brought our own assets.
You just
brought
your own assets, right.
I'd love to follow up with so many of them. We've been recording some trips and tips for THU TV.
Right.
Which is really awesome. And we've been helping out with the collabs as well. So.
Oh, good. Collabs. What do you think about collabs?
It's absolutely amazing. Like, I'm one of the biggest fans of game jams. I take part in game jams all around the world.
Right.
So have it here as well and have so many different artists as well taking part. There's like 10 people on each team.
I know.
And some of the concepts that we've already seen in just 24 hours has been outstanding.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to see how those people are just like, all right, let's jam one out, you know? And they're making content in, 4 days, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to see the finished product.
So let's go through this one more time. If people want to sort of learn more about it, where should they go? And first of all, you can just get Unity for free now, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we offer three versions. So we've got the personal edition, which is completely free to everybody. It's fully featured, so there's no difference technically between the free, the plus version, the pro version.
Right.
And it just all depends on what your income is as an individual or a studio
for
that. So if you're a freelancer, if you're a person who wants to get into Unity, can download it for absolutely free, and
right.
you pay when you're successful. That's all about democratization of game development, right?
Well, I think it's a really interesting solution to do that. Yeah, obviously, yeah. You guys were one of the first people to do that, and I think it really sort of set the standard, right? Because I remember when I was way back in the day when I was in architecture and I was trying to say, maybe I want to try to use a game engine to do something, and you had to license it, and it cost $500,000, seriously, just to license it. It was insane.
Yeah, I mean, when the founders created the company like 12 years ago, that was the goal. Like, we want to make it as easy as possible for creators to make games.
I think it's brilliant, especially when you started going to the mobile market where everyone's like, I want to make money, right? So it was cool to sort of see that. And there's also, obviously, once you get it, so great, it's free, which is incredible, and then what are your best resources that you have found to just get started, learn things, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So our tutorials on unity3.com/learn,
okay.
They're all video-based and text-based. So depending on what your learning method is, you can watch the video, follow along, or you can just read the documentation.
Okay.
Just jump in. Just jump in with a game jam, make a game, see how it goes.
And then generally, and the authoring, obviously. You guys offer us all the authoring that goes almost directly to the stores, right?
Near enough, yeah. So you basically export the package, depending on what it is, be EXE or an APK, and you can upload it to the store from there.
Oh, okay, I got it. I've got two very cool people that are here that are going to be talking about some awesome tools that are being developed that is specifically about the subject that I'm very interested in. So we got Brian and Angus, right? And Brian, you're working, you're over at Oculus Medium, so you're with the Medium Group, right?
Yeah.
And you're obviously with Unity.
Yep, for sure.
And there's a new wave of tools and creative process that's happening out there. And I'm curious to know where you think some of the tools that you guys are doing are going to, are there here now, and where do you think they're going to go? So, Brian, let me start with you.
Right. So I'm the director of the Medium team. I founded it 3 years ago. Medium is a tool for sculpting and virtual reality. And the reason I started it was first time I put a VR headset on, it was just like, oh, we spend all this time. My background is video games. I built a lot of tools for artists that made the video games.
Right.
And watching them work on a 2D screen making a 3D thing, you know, was the best we could do. As soon as I tried a VR headset on, it was kind of obvious to me, right? Oh, this is a 3D thing, right? We're going to make 3D content in it.
Right. And so that was a thing. It was like, this is going to be my new application.
Right, so I was kind of...
my new desktop, or not a desktop anymore.
Right, exactly. Right, like we think of VR as kind of one of the next computing platforms, and so it's like every computing platform, you find the things it's really good at.
Mm-hmm.
One of the qualities of VR is it's, you know, you see things in 3D, you can move around in the space, all that kind of stuff. So frankly, I think actually sculpting was maybe one of the most obvious things to try, and it's working out pretty well.
Yeah, that's great. And we can talk a little bit about that, but I want to make sure that we talk to Angus. Angus, what do you think some of the things that has gone in Unity right now, some of the things that have enabled there, because Unity's obviously been well known as a game development platform and has grown very well at that, but now people are looking at real-time engines as vehicles for creating things within that engine itself. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what Unity is doing in that area?
Well, I think you said it right there and then. People want to take advantage of what real-time gives them in order to be able to create all kinds of different content. So while, yes, Unity is best known as a game engine, it's actually more accurate to call it a content creation engine because you can make games, you can make apps, you can make VR, AR, XR content, and a lot of people are using it to tell what would be traditionally called linear stories. They want to make fiction and do animation, episodic, and even film now.
Right.
So artists, you know, what do they crave? They crave instant response. They crave iteration and experimentation, the ability to see the result of what they're working on right away. And a game engine is a great platform for that because it's real time. So there's no offline render to see if what you're working on is going in the direction you want it to or not. You get that instant feedback. You were talking with Ian Spriggs before.
Yeah.
He was telling me the other day, he's like, well, it's awesome. Instead of getting an image basically an hour, I get 30 of them in a second.
Right.
So I'm instantly seeing if the work I'm doing is what I want it to be, and then I get to stop and either change direction or my idea or pursue it.
Right.
Keep going that way.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously I work for a company that's famous for its offline rendering solution. So I know some of the problems that are involved in just the waiting process. And I think that waiting for rendering is going to go away, right? People don't want to wait for rendering. And the biggest reason, and this goes back to what we're talking about, is feedback, right? When you're creating something, if you have to move something and wait, and move something and wait, you're less likely to make big changes or to see where you can possibly go. What you want to do is you want to be able to move it and then you're done, right? So the only way that's going to happen is if you see it, right? And if you see it in 3D and you sculpt and stuff, I mean, you can do it in 3D packages, but you kind of do that and then you got to turn it around and do it again, turn it around. You're just, that motion is all together, right? Your whole body becomes part of it.
Yeah, one of the big, there's a really big shift in making tools for VR, in that VR, kind of to Angus's point, right? Like, it has to be real time. We actually, our first 9 months of development of Medium, we built it in Unity. We did all of our prototyping in Unity because it's okay. Super, super fast to just get things together and see them.
Right.
And because you need a real-time engine, right? Because, you know, on a monitor, you can render the 3D window and then leave it there until it needs to change. In VR, you got to render 90 frames a second, right? And so it's a challenge, but it also means that once you get used to that, once you get in that headspace, you're building a thing where, yeah, it's super responsive. You just move your head around.
Right. But what do you think about that? I mean, specifically, because I know part of the issues of VR is latency, right? You have to get away with really low latency to get that response. Do you think that's just a massive opportunity of a huge amount of hardware that you can buy or have to buy to do that? Or do you think that's going to start to go away? Do you think the development of hardware is making it simpler to do that?
I think we're at a point, right? In Medium, you can render with a pretty beefy PC, but still you can have a mesh that's 10 million triangles, right? And it can still be keeping up.
That's amazing.
I think a lot of it is that VR development's a little different. You really want to come from more of a game programming background because you have to think about it differently. So when you're sculpting in Medium, the sculpting operations, if you're doing a really huge like add of a lot of clay, that happens on a different thread. It's not necessarily running real time, right? But the rendering is always keeping up. And that lets us kind of keep the performance there because you don't want, you know, judder or anything like that, but still do really significant, substantial stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so Angus, have you found that there's been this, you know, obviously you guys know have a real-time engine. Has there been a huge amount of demands to make sure that your, you know, real-time engine is meeting all those VR standards? I mean, it's got to be pretty tough for you on that front.
Unity is actually used for more VR AR than any other engine or platform, actually. So we have quite a lot of experience with it, and there's been a great amount of optimization and learning.
But what is that specifically because of the fact that you're able to get really low latency on it, or?
It's because of everything to do with it. So all these things need to be taken into account, right? You need the performance and the responsiveness. You need the tools. You need the environment. You need the multi-platform. You need the extensibility. You need to have compatibility with all the headsets and all the various viewing platforms. So all those things come together, and Unity provides it. So it's a really natural platform for people to work on.
Right.
And like Brian said, it's so fast for prototyping and getting your ideas into the system quickly that it's perfectly suitable for this kind of stuff. Real time is used not only in VR, but as I was mentioning, in some other creative stuff too. And people want to use it for architectural visualization, another big application. And one
very aware.
lends itself well to VR as well. We have customers doing stuff in the automotive space that is just mind-blowing. You can go into car dealerships now and not just configure something on a 2D tablet, but actually don a headset and customize every aspect of the car and put it in all kinds of different contexts. And all these kinds of experiences require real time, and they require quality.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, back to Ian, we were chatting with him. He's doing some really amazing art stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And he's doing some work in Unity. And they kept, you know, his understanding was, I'm going to have to reduce my poly count, and actually I'm going to be limited in what I can deliver. And everyone kept coming back to him and saying, nope, give us more. We've got the performance. We can actually increase the quality of that. Now, if you're, you know, really want to control every single aspect to the finest level of detail and quality, then some offline rendering is going to be required, just as you say, at least for now. But as GPU, CPU, as performance increases, as software gets better, as we learn how to program for these applications, all of that's going to go away, I think, just like you said.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm well aware of this, and this is something that I've had a conversation with my company, right, that does, you know, a ray tracer that does makes V-Ray. And I've been discussing it for a while, and a lot of people think of real-time engines as competitors to offline rendering, which I don't think it is. And this has been my philosophy for a while. I think actually there's great partnerships that can happen in this area. My feeling is, the best way I describe it, which apparently Vlado now has embraced, he loves this. Vlado is, by the way, the V in V-Ray. He's the guy who created it. I say, there's two questions to ask. Is, will real-time engines, or will real-time rendering replace offline rendering? Yes, it will. But will rasterized rendering replace ray tracing? Mm-hmm. No.
Right.
Because this is a battle that we won. And the ray tracers won like 10 years ago, right? And we've gone down this road, and I think that's going to be an important part of it. So when we're creating and when we're viewing the sculpts or when we're doing things, ray tracing will play a role there. That is important, and I think it's going to get there. And then when we partner with people that like real-time engines, and we look like, here we have solutions that are this is what, you know, this is what's important. Because I think that a lot of people see things as competing technology, and I don't think there's always... So it was that way. Anyway, just want to get that point out of the way. I want to make sure that we talk a little about how you guys have actually worked together. You said you prototyped your, you know, Medium.
Yep.
But now you're sort of taking Medium and going back into Unity a little bit.
Right. So I was actually just going to bring this up because I think it ties in your point about iteration time being super important, I think, is key. And then the other thing I would add is accessibility in terms of, you know, like letting automotive people, like, if you are a former, like the Medium team is mostly former AAA game developers, right? And we're not, you know, there aren't like a billion of us in the world, right? And so other people in other industries that want to do this stuff, you don't want to have to go out and find some unicorn, right, to do this. So I think the accessibility matters a lot there too. There's like theoretical performance, but there's also just like, if I'm just a normal person that wants to put something together, right, how easy is that to do? So something we did recently, we just did a game jam in Berlin, mm-hmm. where we used Medium to make the assets, and a lot of them used Unity as the engine that the piece was in. And these weren't, you know, like necessarily super experienced game developers, artists, we had people for music, all this kind of stuff. And they made a really natural pair, because one of our goals with Medium, right, is like you don't have to learn a million hotkeys, you don't have to learn all this stuff to use it.
Right.
And then they were, you know, they were able to learn Medium pretty quickly and get stuff out of it, get it into Unity, quickly put something together, right? It was like really a wonderful, because it was only a weekend, right? And they got a lot of stuff done.
So that's really cool that you're able to make that bridge and do that. I want to talk a little bit about VR from both sides and both. I want to hear both of your opinions on this, but obviously we know now that like these hand controllers that are happening. It's don't worry about the sound.
Yep.
We're all good. The hand controllers that are going on in VR are sort of now becoming the tool that people have to worry about, right? So, what is your opinion about the idea of motion? And here's my example, right? Minority Report. Remember the big interfaces on Minority Report, and everyone's saying that's going to be the interfaces of the future. Everyone's going to do like that. It turns out that people get really tired when they wave their hands around a lot.
They do.
And so a mouse and keyboard is pretty easy for that process. But what is your opinion about those motions?
Well, so there's different ways of using the hand controllers. I think one of the design challenges we've had with the hand controllers is just that a keyboard is an easy fallback because you've got 102 keys and you can cord them together. And so if you're just like, oh, we need this like this weird extraneous setting, you can just throw it on a hotkey.
Right.
I would say the biggest design challenge with the hand controllers is just you have a limited set of buttons. And then in terms of accessibility, you don't even want to use, like we try to avoid making the buttons and thumbsticks necessary, because unless you're someone who's familiar with video game, you know, or that kind of thing, if we take a traditional clay sculptor who doesn't use computers much, they don't want to learn how to use all these buttons and thumbsticks and triggers and stuff like that. That, I think, is really more the challenge. In terms of the ergonomics, there's actually a really good book called Make It So, which is an analysis of user interfaces from science fiction, right? Mm-hmm. Like movies and all this kind of stuff, and the lessons that you take from that. But most of them, like Minority Report, isn't a UI you would ever deliberately use for real. You know, it was designed to look really visually impressive.
Right.
But yeah, it's more just like holding your arms up with your shoulders is really tiring.
Right.
We often demo Medium standing because it feels really dynamic and it kind of encourages you to move around. But a lot of the artists that use it just sit in an office chair. You know, we make it so you can grab your sculpt and hold it wherever you want. So they just work with it in their lap. You know, and it's exactly the same ergonomic position you'd be right. using with a keyboard or mouse. We have one artist who's like, oh yeah, I just lie on my bed. It's like, that's how I use it. So I think it actually gives you, I think the hand controllers give you a lot of freedom to do, you know, however you want.
And you feel that the controllers, you can just still pick up all of very, very fine movement, right, even at this level.
Yeah, early on when we were prototyping Medium, the touch controllers didn't exist yet, and we were using some third-party alternatives that didn't have as much precision, and so... Right. A lot of our design changed when we got the touches because
sure.
they're super. I mean, the precision on them was kind of exceeded what I thought we'd be able to get out of them.
Right. So, so when you was talking about creating Medium and it first prototyped it on Unity, do you feel that there are people out there that are actually using it? It's almost like, you know, it's very meta in a sense. You're using a tool to create a tool to make a tool, right?
It's very meta, and that's one of the things that. It is really interesting about Unity. What I like, the interesting example is, well, you could actually use Unity to make Unity.
Right.
So get your head around that one, right?
Yeah.
Unity is actually an environment for authoring software, really. A
yes,
computer game is software, and apps are software. We think of it as a game and that it might be different, but actually that's what it is. So you're in an authoring environment that's got a specific front end that's customized for the application that you've got at hand, right?
Right.
So in the world of VR, we've actually done some amazing things. There's this prototype that we've built called Editor VR, and you can actually don the headset and use Unity in VR and actually author your space in VR and do all the controls. So that's incredible. So you can imagine some converged environment where not only are you creating the assets and the digital content that you want to use in the game,
right.
but you could actually do the authoring in that space. And we've seen even this week in the collabs here at THU, there are a couple of game, there's one of the projects is VR,
right.
and you see the artist is sitting there taking the headset on and off, and it interrupts them and it gets in the way of the creativity and the flow and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So you want to be able to have that same interactivity and preview in real time and with your physical inputs as well as the response from the authoring environment.
Right.
So all kinds of stuff that's really cool like that, and it's going to be interesting to see how those develop. And as far as the ergonomics go, you know, for sure, it's tiring to stand there with your arms in the air, but you can really relate to that sense of, okay, I'm going to actually immerse myself. And speaking with artists here, everyone's talking about how, well, you know, these digital interfaces are great because of what they give you, but really, artists are... They're analog in so many ways, right? They're used to dials, they're used to levers, they're used to brushes and pencils and paper and canvas and paint and all these kinds of things. So the more tactile and more the creation environment resembles what they're actually working on,
mm-hmm.
I think the better they're going to be able to adopt these technologies and produce great content.
Well, that brings up a good point. Where obviously you brought up the idea of looking at the tools, right? The tools that you use, or the representation of the tools almost in whatever environment you're doing. What do you think is going to be a trend in this area, right? Where do you think it's going to change? How do you think interfaces are going to change, or where do they need to go, or what's going to happen there so that, like the guy who's sitting in bed and working in VR, what is this... His tools that he uses in VR.
Right, it's an interesting thing right now because VR is both a superset of reality and also a subset in some ways. Like, we don't have haptics in the sense that you can, you know, like an artist will have like a, you know, box of tools and you'll be able to recognize the rake by the feel of the handle, right? You don't have to look over. So we did a bunch of interface prototyping early on, mm-hmm. where we would have kind of more like skeuomorphism, right? Like things that were in the world that looked like the thing you expected them to look like.
Oh, when you picked them up, it would be tracked or something.
Right, yeah. But you know, it was like, well, you had to put them kind of further apart than you kind of really would in the real world, because you can't just pile them all in a box and kind of rifle through it yet.
Right.
At the same time, it's like you can have an infinite number of them, there's no gravity, you know, all this other stuff that's kind of a superset. So I think it's, I mean, you know, I think basically my answer is going to be kind of a dodge, which is like, we just need a lot of people trying a lot of different experiments because we don't know the answers yet.
Right.
I think the initial applications, like, I don't think that Medium, we're going to look back in 10 years and be like, wow, those Medium guys really figured it all out. And
right.
It's like, we're trying a bunch of experiments. Everyone else is trying a bunch of experiments. Slowly we'll figure out, you know, it's like copying the real world is good for some things, but really isn't the ultimate goal.
That yeah, exactly. That's kind of my point is I don't really know. I think there's going to be something that, like, completely unexpected, right? That suddenly, oh, I did not expect this to actually work, but this is actually very natural, right? And I talked about it, the actual Oculus handsets, right? When I look at those physically in the real world, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to learn this tool. This makes no sense whatsoever. And it was the most natural. I don't know who designed it, but they're brilliant.
Yeah.
Because the minute I put it on, I was like, this totally makes sense to me. Totally makes sense. And I could see my hands, and they represent, you can hide them if you want to, but seeing my hands helped because it felt very real. And so it made total sense. So someone's going to do that, but in VR.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that's, you know, like where it's going to be that moment, right? Because someone, I don't know. I'm just curious about the tools that people are using and how those interfaces that are not beyond the game interfaces, right? That are the, I worked in visual effects for years and I sat at my desk for 12, 14 hours. And if I'm going to do that in VR, I better have a nice set of tools to do that, right?
Right, not to mention, a lightweight headset and,
yep.
No tether maybe,
right.
And an ability to share the work with somebody and have that teamwork. And
yep.
So I think there's some advents that still need to happen in terms of the actual physical interface,
yep.
into the virtual world before they can be fully, fully adopted. And so there's a lot of innovation yet to come on those fronts. So it's going to be exciting to see how it all develops. But the applications now are so compelling, whether
yep.
it be artistic or industrial.
Yep.
Your examples of, Brian's example of like reaching for a tool, you can imagine all the medical simulation.
Yes.
And you've got your AI assistant giving you the scalpel,
yep.
and as you go through the procedure, and how great it'll be to when we finally end up having our bypasses that
right.
the doctor's, you know, properly trained and
yeah.
practiced and knowing what to do. So all those kinds of applications are really interesting and really exciting.
Yeah, I think there is going to be some great moments in VR and a lot of things. I think people are still trying to find, there's a lot of conversation out there about what are we going to do in VR? Will I really be spending time in VR? But I think just that idea of sculpting in VR makes sense for me, you know. We talked about it in the with Ian Spriggs and Scott Eaton earlier. Like, there was a moment in character animation that was like a breakthrough, and that was ZBrush came, right? Because that was when suddenly you went from patch modeling and NURBS to polygonal pulling and pulling to actually just being able to sculpt, right? And so something like Medium is like the next thing, that's the next watershed moment, right? So that now you can do this, right?
Certainly the hope. I will admit I'm more of an incrementalist when it comes, you know, I think there, you can look back and kind of find these points in time. But when I think about VR, I think about, look at like windowed operating systems, right? Because
right.
it's kind of the same problem, which is let's figure out all these paradigms for, like, you know, for example, in VR, like, how do you have more than one application running at a time? And on windowed OSs, that we figured that out, right? You know,
right.
We know how windows work in 2D, and we visually understand that they're stacked on top of each other and stuff like that. But when you look at, like, the original Xerox PARC stuff to today, a lot of, you know, kind of in lockstep, the technology, you'd get higher resolution, which would enable new things, which would figure new things out.
Yep.
But there wasn't really, you know, I think you can point out, okay, PARC was obviously very important there, you know, Windows, the Mac OS stuff was important. But in aggregate, it's just this kind of steady incremental improvement. And I think we'll see the same thing with VR. You know, a new piece of hardware will come out that has some new thing, it can track your retinas, or it's got haptics, or, you know, whatever it is, And then we'll kind of respond to that. But when you look at back at it, probably over a 20, 30-year curve, it'll just be kind of steady improvement and settling on new conventions.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I do think that definitely there was something that happened then, and I think there's something that's happening now. But since we're running a little short on time, I want to make sure people got a chance to find out where they can learn more about things. So Unity is obviously unity.com.
Unity3D.com. Okay. And actually on the site, we have interesting solutions pages for VR and AR specifically, so you can find out all about that, including interesting creation tools that we support and integrate,
right,
like Medium through .obj. So you can go there and find out about that, download it, and try it for yourself.
And Unity is available for free on personal?
Unity is available for free. We want to democratize development. You can get fully featured, no restrictions Unity for free right now. Go ahead and get it and try it out for yourself.
That's really cool that you guys are doing that. And then what about Medium? So
Medium, if you go to oculus.com/medium, that's our main website, has links off. We've got, you know, Instagram, social media stuff where we post a bunch of the art that's being made. And if you have a Rift and Touch, you know, Medium comes bundled with it.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for doing this, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure. All right. Great talking to you.